Example of both the guitar work by Jose Gobo, Brazilian player, a great player, and Jim Pisano, who's actually in charge of a program out in Kansas, but has been hanging around here working on some licks there, I guess. Thanks for listening. Again, that's over at the Iron Post at 9 o'clock tonight. There's a great show starting earlier with Scott Prilliman. Am I saying it right? Prilliman? Confusing a lawyer and a saxophonist. That's not good. Labor hour is at hand. More discussion of the Champaign school referendum, I guess, which I have outsider view from Urbana. I'm still looking for that report that was critical of the site location. I guess there's no intrinsic connection between the referendum and the site, I've heard it said here on the radio, but it would be easier that way, I suppose. Anyway, I'm running over long. Opinions of those of the speakers, not necessarily shared by others at the station. Again, you can find the palace material at Al Jazeera, and the segments are actually quite short, but pointed about voter suppression in this election.
Hello, and welcome to the November 1st edition of the World Labor Hour here at WEFT 90.1 on the FM dial, and certainly happy to be back working on the airwaves again. Transmitter's been fixed, and we appreciate all the folks who messaged us, called us, asking about what was going on, and we thank all the volunteers that got everything working here for us. I think some of them are out at the transmitter right now looking at some more issues out there, but we're really happy to be on the air here again at 90.1 FM, WEFT in Champaign, and streaming at weft.org. This is the World Labor Hour, and this is Bob sitting in as the host this week, and I'll start off with some underwriting here. This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, call 217-328-2295. And the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. And programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. And finally, the Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio. And we're going to do a couple of short news stories here to start off the program. And we got a special guest, Mark Chagnon from Unit 4 Schools is in here. He'll be discussing some of the issues about the upcoming referendum at the polls about the schools coming up Tuesday, November 4th. And we'll also be discussing some of the interesting programs that he's involved with the Unit 4 Schools. So going to start off this week with, I should read the disclaimer here. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associates, station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. And I'll say here, faithful listeners to the Labor Hour program know we've reported on the Honeywell plant in Metropolis, Illinois for years. The USW, United Steelworkers 7-669 workers have been on strike. They've been locked out. The company has refused to call back some union leaders after layoffs, and they currently are locked out of the plant. They've been locked out for 91 days since the beginning of August. So I say that as a bit of history. You know we've reported about the Honeywell plant down there for years, and here's something from the United Steelworkers website. There was apparently a release last Sunday night that happened down there at the Metropolis plant. So read the story kind of here from the USW's website. The United Steelworkers Union is calling for an investigation after photos and videos taken Sunday evening showed suspected hazardous gas escaping the Honeywell uranium conversion facility in Metropolis, Illinois. The suspected release of uranium hexafluoride, UF6, comes nearly 3 months after Honeywell locked out 150 USW Local 7-669 members on August 2nd and replaced a group of experienced and well-trained workers with temporary laborers who lack adequate experience in dealing with hazardous substances. It is time for Honeywell to end the senseless lockout, return these 150 experienced workers to their jobs, and come to terms on a new fair contract agreement. That's a quote from the USW International President Leo W. Girard. Furthermore, the United Steelworkers call on U.S. Senator Mitch McConnell, who represents at least half of the permanent Honeywell workforce, to seek a full investigation into this incident to make sure it never happens again. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission must perform an independent investigation of the release and the failed response. They're also talking to Representative John Shimkus, Republican of Illinois, whose district includes Metropolis. He's the senior member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, but has failed to take issue with the facility. Then again, Shimkus' top campaign contributor is Honeywell and International. So in conversations with USW Local 7-669 President Stephen Leck and NRC Representative Blaine Sunday's leak on the failure of equipment that was installed by outside contractors, work that was previously done in-house by USW members. UF6, uranium hexafluoride, is used in the uranium enrichment process. It's highly corrosive and reactive and can cause severe burns and serious radiation exposure upon contact with skin. While a Honeywell representative in New Jersey told local media, there is no indication that any material has left the building, raw video taken outside the plant shows the suspected gas leaving the building for at least 6 minutes before water mitigation towers were activated. So I'll mention you can go to a Facebook website, Honeywell Workers, we'll find it here, Honeywell Workers Facebook page, and you can watch 6 minutes of video before these water filtering hoses get turned on and start tampering down the exhaust that's coming out of the plant. So anyway, neighbors were very concerned. They called 911 and were told by the company that nothing had been released from the plant. But I'd suggest you check out the Facebook page. It's Support for Honeywell Workers - Metropolis, Illinois. You can watch the video for yourself there and see that there was definitely fumes coming out of the plant. This happened last Sunday night, and you can check, follow it, and see. It's quite interesting. We'll see what happens. The NRC is on site and investigating, but neighbors are concerned. People are concerned. And it says here, there was a systematic breakdown in the response to the emergency. It wasn't just our people. The union is saying local citizens called 911 and were told that the company has reported the situation to be under control, all while they watched the gaseous vapor leave the building and the site, said Leck, who was on the scene during the incident. So we'll see what happens down there. Like I say, they're targeting John Shimkus a little bit because his top campaign contributor is Honeywell International. And you know we've talked about Honeywell's CEO, David Cote, a little bit. Back in 2011, he was one of the top 10 highest paid CEOs in the country, made $55.8 million. Most of what the union is concerned about here is things such as health benefits, retirement benefits, and things like that. You know we've reported in the past that they were trying to cut down on the health benefits for people that retired after they'd spent years working with this dangerous UF6 compounds and stuff. Anyway, we're going to move on from that story and mention that Ann Feeney is going to be in town next week. She's part of the 6th annual Champaign Urbana Folk and Roots Festival. And we're going to listen to a track or two from Ann Feeney. We'll start off with one of my favorites here, War on the Workers.
Listen up. We've got a war zone here today right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
Oh,
it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. Going to work could be the death of you and me. me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon's solidarity. Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. When they boost your copay,
war on the workers.
Don't you know what to say?
War on the workers.
When they talk privatization,
war on the workers.
And cooperation,
war on the workers.
When they call you a team,
war on the workers.
You better learn how to scream.
War on the workers.
Oh, that's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. They can lock us out, they can lock us up. We cannot give in. It's a war on child labor protection. It's a war on the 8-hour day. It's a war on occupational health and safety. It's a war on social security. Now thanks to WTO, GATT, NAFTA, MAI, the IMF, and the World Bank, it's a worldwide war. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Yeah, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time, sisters and brothers, you know it's time right now. I said it's time we started calling the shots.
Okay, sorry. All right, we're back here at the World Labor Hour at WEFT 90.1 on the FM dial and streaming at weft.org. Another news story for you here about Microsoft is paying its CEO, Satya Nadella, $84 million. So it says, all told for the first year, it's a package worth $84 million, the company said in the regulatory filing. It breaks down like this. A base salary of $918,000, a cash bonus of $3.6 million, a one-time grant of stock valued at $59.2 million in connection with his promotion to CEO that he will not be able to cash out until 2019, and another one-time stock grant worth $13.5 million given to him in August 2013 to keep him around during the CEO search process. With these grants, his stock holdings jumped from 231,000 shares before he was CEO to 4.9 million shares of stock after he got the job. So it's hard to compare this to Steve Ballmer's salary. Ballmer was the last CEO at Microsoft. Ballmer's money mostly comes from the enormous stake he holds, almost 4% of the company, 333 million shares of stock, you know. It talks about Nadella's first-year compensation package does fare well compared to other first-year tech CEOs. Oracle is paying its new co-CEOs, Safra Katz and Mark Hurd, $37.7 million apiece for their first year since they were handed these new titles. And that was a pay cut from $44 million the year before. Their jobs hadn't really changed. And their boss, Larry Ellison, is still higher paid. He's making $67 million in 2014. Apple's Tim Cook's first year pay was off the charts, a staggering $378 million, mostly from a huge one-time stock grant. His pay has since come down to a mere $4.3 million in 2013, but about 70 million of his stock options vested that year too. Marissa Meyer, the CEO at Yahoo, was paid $36.6 million in her first year, and IBM CEO Ginni Rometty was paid $16.1 million for her first year. Meg Whitman's pay package was valued at $15.3 million for her first year, but under her reign, the stock has tripled in value, so those one-time stock rewards are worth a lot more now. So Nadella's pay is of particular interest since he indicated that he's never asked for a raise in his life, and you may recall he was ridiculed somewhat a couple weeks ago because of him saying that he didn't think women should really ask for raises, that it was kind of karma that they should kind of let these things just happen to them and stuff. So anyway, that's some of what the high-tech CEOs are making out there in Silicon Valley. And that kind of leads into a story about another company, Amazon, and they just released their diversity numbers for the first time. And surprise, surprise, it's mostly male and mostly white. So Amazon released workplace diversity figures for the first time this Friday, and they did little to set the Seattle online retailer apart from its tech industry peers. Amazon employs more than 88,400 people around the world, and noted that its workforce was unsurprisingly composed of most white males. Some 63% of its Amazonians were male, while white employees made up 60% of the workforce. Those percentages were even higher for employees in managerial positions, of which 75% were male and 71% were white. Amazon's report was troubling. Blacks make up only 15% of Amazon's global employees, but only 4% of its managers. Hispanics comprise 9% of the total workforce and only 4% of manager positions. Asians were the only race and ethnicity group to have a larger percentage of managers, 18%, as compared to its overall percentage of workers, 13%. So women represent 37% of the workforce and only 25% of the total managers. Anyway, we're going to get right back into another song here from Ann Feeney. Once again, she's going to be at next week's 6th Annual Champaign Urbana Folk and Roots Festival, happening all around downtown Urbana next weekend, Friday and Saturday, November 7th and 8th. You can check that out at the Folk and Roots website, folkandroots.org, for all the locations and times. And I'm going to get back into Ann Feeney's CD here and listen to Union Made, and then we'll be right back with our guest, Mark Chagnon.
There once was a union maid who never was afraid of the goons and the kings and the company pinks and the deputy sheriffs who made the raid. She went to the union hall when meeting it was called, and when those company goons came round, she always stood her ground. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking with the union. I'm sticking with the union. I'm sticking with the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking with the union. This union maid was wise to the tricks of company spies. She couldn't be fooled by the company stool. She'd always organize the guys. She always got her way when she struck for higher pay. She'd show her card to the National Guard, and this is what she'd say. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking with the union. I'm sticking with the union. I'm sticking with the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking with the union. I'm sticking with the union till the day I die. When this song was first sung, our fight had just begun, and union maids in the needle trades organized till the job was done. In ladies' auxiliaries of giant factories, side by side they won new pride in CIO victory. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking with the union. I'm sticking with the union. I'm sticking with the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking with the union. I'm sticking with the union till the day I die. Now union maids are found in coal mines underground, climbing to fights on construction sites, and they'll never keep us down. In offices and schools, we'll redefine those rules, working every day toward comparable pay. And with union men, we say, oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking with the union. I'm sticking with the union. I'm sticking with the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking with the union. I'm sticking with the union till the day I die. So you gals who want to be free, won't you take this tip from me? Break out of that mold we've all been sold. You've got a fighting history. That fight for women's rights with workers must unite. Just roll those bones like Mother Jones to the front of every fight. And you can't scare me. I'm sticking with the union. I'm sticking with the union. I'm sticking with the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking with the union. I'm sticking with the union till the day I die.
Once again, that's Ann Feeney from her Union Made CD, and that was the title track there, Union Made. And once again, she'll be in town. She's going to hopefully be a guest on this show next Saturday, November 7th. So November 8th, that would be. Yeah, so check into the Labor Hour next Saturday, and of course, check out the Champaign Urbana Folk and Roots Festival happening all around downtown Urbana next weekend. So one of the things about this Amazon story, it says here Amazon blamed the disparity of minorities and women in its workplace on a lack of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics encouragement for those groups in schools. The company pledged to donate to resources and programs like code.org to increase computer and science-based learning among children and teens. So that kind of leads us into our guest that's with us today, Mark Chagnon. He's with the Unifor School District. And Mark, he kind of runs, he doesn't kind of, he does run a program. He's ran a program there for 16 years, the ECP program, which is
Education to Careers and Professions.
There you go. One more time, because I had the wrong mic turned on.
It's called Education to Careers and Professions. And I've had the privilege of running that for about, like you said, 16 years, Bob.
Wonderful, wonderful. And that works with partnerships among business and education to expose kids to just those kind of things.
Well,
science, technology,
exactly.
Mathematics, and trades and things like that in schools.
The nicest thing about this program, and one of the reasons I was a businessman and left the business field in 1998 to come into the Champaign Unifor Schools to coordinate this program. And what it was basically coming from is that Bill Clinton in 1994 came out with the School to Work Act.
Right.
And from that monies that he gave all the states, the Illinois came up with Education to Careers. And then Centennial High School said, well, let's adopt that and let's call it Education to Careers and Professions.
Yeah.
And so basically it's a program where we allow our students starting in freshman year to discover their interest, discover their values, their goals, their talents and abilities, and most specifically their personality, to link that up to what career pathway would be best for them. And the nicest thing about the Education and Careers program, in my opinion, was it wasn't for this group of kids or this group of kids. It was for every child that walked in our high schools. And so if a student said to me, Mr. Chagnon, I want to be an auto mechanic, mm-hmm. then I was helping that young man or young lady find that career pathway. If I had another student say, Mr. Chagnon, I want to do genomic research at the University of Illinois, then I help that person find their pathway. So whether it be an airplane pilot or a firefighter, whether it be a carpenter or whether it be a cardiologist, we're here to help our kids figure out what they want to do before they walk that stage.
And this program starts even actually before they get into high school? You're
mentioning
that you're involved with each of the schools around the middle schools.
Yes.
And, you know.
One of the nice things about the program is that it started at Centennial, but it grew to Central. And then in 2008, we actually adopted a program. It's an internet-based program called Career Cruising. And it allows each of our students to get online and have their own electronic portfolio. And from the interest that they do, the skills they pick up, they can put that into their portfolio and keep it for the rest of their life. And it also helps them devise a plan for, okay, I want to become an auto mechanic. And I tell the kids today, I said, in the old days when I went on a trip with my dad, he'd throw that map, that paper map, over the seat and say, okay, tell us where we're going, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have to open that map up across the back seat and be able to tell Dad where we're going and how many miles it is to Tuscola and on down to Mount Vernon. Today, of course, I ask the kids, when you go on a trip, what do you use? Well, Mr. Shagnon, we use the GPS.
Right.
And I said, that's great. I said, now, in order for the GPS to work, what do you have to tell it? Well, you have to tell it a destination.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the same thing we do with our kids in school now. Starting in sixth grade, we tell our kids, if you want to get somewhere in life, if you want to be something in life, you got to set your destination. And that GPS, the career cruising, will help take you there with my guidance and the counselors.
Wonderful. What percentage of kids do you think actually know or have a good idea what they want to do at that point in their education?
You know, Bob, it's a great question. And many of our kids seem to think they want to be an NBA basketball player.
Right.
And then they realize that they're only 4'3" and they're never going to jump in anywhere from 6 to 7 inches at a time. So
exactly, yeah.
I keep telling them, I said, that's a great dream to have. We might want to have a backup.
Yeah.
But our hope, Bob, is that when our students walk the stage from Central or Centennial, and they graduate from our schools, that when they walk that stage, they go up on the stage, they get their diploma, and they're walking off the stage, and I tell them, I said, now look, I'm old as dirt, but I'm going to be at the bottom of those stairs when you get ready to walk down the stairs to sit down again. And I'm going to look you square in the eye, and I'm going to say, okay, Bob, what's your purpose and direction in life now? And if you look at me and say, Mr. Shagnon, I want to become a radio announcer, then I'm going to school to do this, and I'm going to, great, then you've got a direction, and I'm proud of you. But if you walk down those stairs and say, I don't know, then I feel as a school district we failed that student.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's our responsibility to do as much as we possibly can to give each and every student a purpose and direction in life.
One of those methods of doing that is exposing them to as many different forms of education.
Exactly.
And fields that
Exactly. And that's why I'm so focused on my new slogan. For years, I think the community's heard this slogan, No Child Left Behind.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that, and I don't want to leave any child behind. But my new slogan now, after I've looked at statistics, if I look at what I'm hearing, and I'm hearing that the largest group of unemployed folks in this country are age 16 to 24, or even underemployed. And that really disturbs me. And so I think our kids have thought, well, if you go to school and you go on to a 4-year university, then all your problems are taken away and you graduate and you get a job. And what they're finding out, that's not exactly true.
Mm-hmm.
And with that in mind, I am trying to help our students understand that there are other ways that you can make an outstanding living. And I'm trying to bring back, and have for the last 3 years, a focus on the trades. And the focus on, you know, using your hands in your career, be it the trades, be it manufacturing, be it something that is even in agriculture. You know, Bob, what really gets me, and I went to the University of Illinois, and I graduated in 1974 with a degree in ag economics and finance.
Mm-hmm.
And here we live on top of the world's richest soil in the world.
Yeah.
And our two high schools, Champaign Central and Centennial, do not have an ag program.
That's
so one of my goals with our new high schools is to bring agriculture back to our high schools and to make it a prominent point for all of our students.
Sure. One of our largest employers in the area too is Kraft.
Exactly.
Involved with the food industry.
And so you've got the food industry, you also have the manufacturing because Kraft's a manufacturer. And also you have all the trades, which I've been working diligently with the East Central Illinois Building and Construction Trades group. To help our kids understand the opportunities that they have through the trades. And my dream is to have a facility at one of our new high schools where the shop, and I hope both high schools, and that's the plan, is to have at both high schools an ability to build a home inside the structure, and around that building on the inside have every building trade represented with an 8-foot workstation. And have their banner above that so that our kids see the trades and our trades see the kids and they work hand in hand. Because without that partnership, our students aren't going to be exposed to this.
That's one of the things I saw on the website, that you talk about your partnerships with businesses and trades and stuff like that.
Yes.
So you work closely with the unions locally?
Yes, sure do. And they have been unbelievable to work with me. They're very cooperative. They understand that we've got to get quality individuals coming into their services. And I think many times the perception is that, well, you don't have high math skills, or you don't have good, so you can go in the trade. And I'm telling you right now, if you don't have high math skills, you're going to have a real difficulty succeeding in the trades. And so I tell all of our kids today, I've looked at the future, and I've listened to, there's one gentleman, Edward Gordon, who's an internationally known speaker on workforce in this country. And he said at a meeting I went to 2 years ago, he said, Mark, by the year 2020, we will have 123 million high-skilled jobs in this country.
Sure.
And we'll only have 42 million people to fill those jobs if we stay on the track we're on. At the same time, if we stay on the same track, we're going to have about 45 million low-skilled jobs in this country, and we're going to have over 100 million people to fill those jobs. So we're destined for some really bad times, in my opinion, if we don't start training and giving our kids the skills they need to be high tech. And high tech could be in manufacturing.
Sure.
It can be in trades. It can be in agriculture. It can be across the board. And then when you talk about STEM, about 75% of the STEM jobs are hands-on jobs.
Sure.
They're technical jobs.
Nowadays, you got to know about CNC milling machines.
Exactly.
People are using lasers. You don't use a level as much as you used to 40 years ago. You know.
Well, what
you're using the high-tech equipment now to get your jobs done and to do those trade jobs.
And if you can't use that technology, then you're not going to have the jobs.
Right.
And it was interesting to me. I went to one of our manufacturers in town, and he said, Mark, I'm telling you right now, if you've got students that love to play video games, and I go, how many would you like? I can line them up right
sure.
now.
All of
he
them.
He said, if you've got kids that are really proficient in video games, he said, they are the best robotic operators we've ever found in our manufacturing system.
Sure.
So if you find those kids, we will put them to work running our robotics because they're phenomenal.
Excellent.
And I never would have put those two things together.
Yeah. We're going to do another quick musical break here, and then we're going to come back and talk to Mark about the upcoming referendum on the schools and the election on Tuesday. So another track from Ann Feeney here, and we're going to play actually School Days End from Ann Feeney here at the World Labor Hour on WEFT Champaign.
School day's over, come on and jump. Time to be getting your pit boots on. On with your sark and moleskin trousers, it's time you were on your way. Time you were learning the pitman's job and earning a pitman's pay. Come on then, Jim, it's time to go. Time you were working down below. Time to be handling a pick and shovel. You start at the pit today. Time you were learning the collier's job and earning a collier's pay. It's almost light. Time you were off to the anthracite. The morning mist is on the valley. It's time you were on your way. Time you were learning a miner's job and earning a miner's pay. The morning mist is on the valley. It's time you were on your way. Time you were learning the miner's job and earning a
miner's pay. School day's over.
And we're back here at the World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 on the FM dial. Once again, our transmitter's working out there and streaming at weft.org. And we're here talking with Mark Chagnon. He's with the Unit 4 School District. And we're going to talk briefly about the Unit 4 School Board proposal for a bond referendum to renovate and expand Centennial High School and build a new Central High School. And I think most of the conversation has been about building the new Central High School, and I don't think folks realize how much is really going into renovating and expanding Centennial High School. And there's also money going to some of the other great schools and middle schools. Is that correct to renovate
Bob,
them?
Back in 2009, I think what you're referring to there would be the 1% sales tax that was voted in right. in 2009 here in Champaign County. And all the 1% sales tax then is divided up amongst all the schools in Champaign County, and it's used for bricks and mortar. Okay, mm-hmm. The Champaign Board of Education, when that was voted in, said, well, we've got to look at our entire picture. Now, what's ironic to this, in my opinion, I grew up in Champaign, so this is my home. I went to Bottenfield Elementary School. I went there, I started there in 50-something. It was open in 56, mm-hmm. okay? Yeah. So I was in a brand-new elementary school. Oh, this is awesome. Well, the last brand-new school that had been built in Champaign was 1960. That was Robeson Elementary. Hmm. And then in the late 90s, they said, hey, we're running out of space for elementary schools. They had to run a referendum then to build the Stratton Elementary School on mm-hmm. the north side and Barksdale Elementary on the south side. Mm-hmm. But up until 1998, 97, we hadn't built a new school in Champaign. That's 37, 38 years out
wow.
without building a new school. So it's one of those issues where now, because of the capacity, and we've got kids coming, we're like, okay, we're at 103-104% capacity at both high schools right now, total.
Really?
So we've got, where are we going to put these kids? At Centennial, we got so crowded to have classroom space, we had to actually put a portable trailer out in front of the school.
I noticed that,
and it
that.
Has two
yeah.
classrooms in it. Now, what people don't talk about, Bob, is that you've got to walk outside. Now, okay, walk outside. It's okay. Well, when it's snowing, when it's icy, when it's raining, those kids have to leave the main building, go out to their classroom, then go back in. Okay, that's okay. So we walk a mile to school without shoes. We got it. I understand.
Uphill
that.
Both ways.
Both ways. Yeah. Both ways. But those classrooms really can't be science classrooms.
Right.
They can't be a lot of things, so they can only be certain things for our kids. If the capacity issue is there, and it's a fact. And the other issue is, if the cost of doing anything, and you and I both know this, today it costs $1. If we wait a year, it's going to cost $1.10 or $1.05. If we wait 2 years, and so the cost of things doesn't go down, it only goes up. If we know we have a tremendous need for brand new high schools or upgraded high school in Champaign, then we've got to act, because if we continue to kick that can down the road, we're just pushing that capacity issue up, and we're causing the cost to go up. So, you know, when I look at Centennial High School today, it used to have industrial technology there.
That's what we were talking about during the break there.
But today it doesn't have it, because they've had to replace those rooms with core classrooms and just other things.
So there's no more wood shop in
there? There's no wood shop, electrical, metal work.
Nothing at all at Centennial.
No. And so when I have a young man or young woman walk into Champaign Centennial High School and say, wow, where's the shop classes? We don't have them. Well, I really want to go into shop. I want to be an auto mechanic, or I want to be a welder, or I want to be a – well, we don't have that here. And by the way, I just mentioned welding, and that kind of helps me share this with you, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Central is the only school in town that's got a shop.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the shop area of Central High School is the new addition, which was finished in 1956.
New addition.
That's the new addition.
Yeah.
It was originally built. The first part was built in 1938, and then in 1956 they added on. And when they did that, they took Champaign High School, that used to be where Edison is now, and brought it over to this school on University Avenue. Well, that area, that shop area, has been reduced over the years. Same problem that Centennial has, but they maintained the wood shop,
mm-hmm.
and they maintained an auto part of the shop. Well, we hadn't had welding at Champaign Central or Champaign high schools for years.
Yeah.
And so I pushed and pushed. And this past year, one of our teachers said, Mark, I'll be willing to go get trained if you'll help me. And let's start welding up. We wrote it up. We put it in the curriculum handbook. And this year, Bob, we have 81 students in Champaign schools taking welding one.
Wow.
And they're taking it at Central. So we got kids from Centennial actually busing during the day over to Central to take this welding class. And of that 81 students, Bob, 17 are female. 17.
Good.
So to me, when I have the unions come to me and say, Mark, we need people coming in the unions with hand, you know, abilities and hands-on, and we need females, and we need minorities, and we need this, and they just list a long, I said, I'll do everything I can to help you get that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we've done. We've taken the shop we've got at Central. We had to put in a $30,000 dust collector because OSHA said it's too dangerous for your kids to work in here. It's outdated.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't wait till we have a new school. We've got to do it now. The welding area. We had this teacher and one of his senior students built 8 welding booths. We didn't have them. So they built them. I had to find the ventilation for them, and I had to find the electrical for them. So you invest that money so that we could give the kids the opportunity. But it's in cramped spaces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you get a kid with a welding torch, you don't want him too close to a gas tank, okay?
Right.
Well, we got 3 cars in that shop. You know, so it's the
– kind of serves as your automotive shop too?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if we could have the right facilities, then we can offer the right opportunities for our kids.
And like I say, part of the referendum is to – build the new Central High School.
Yes, sir.
Also to renovate and expand Centennial High School.
Right.
So you'd have some trade shop classes at both high schools.
Both high schools will have industrial technology. Both high schools will have automotive. Both high schools will get back to, let's have woodworking at both schools, because we want to bring back that opportunity for our kids. And, you know, I want to bring back applied mathematics.
Right.
Let's get out of the theoretical mathematics and let's get back to applied mathematics. If I got to give a speech, why can't I go out by an automobile, stand by that automobile and give you a speech and tell you all about the engine and all the moving parts? That's my speech.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're giving a speech. It may not be a speech in the speech class, but it's a speech there. Let's listen to our kids. Let's listen to what their needs are. And let's listen to what our employers' needs are. Because my opinion is, instead of No Child Left Behind, let's have No Child Left Unemployed.
Yeah.
Okay, and many of our kids are unemployed right now.
Yeah, or employed with or fast food jobs or something.
Exactly.
Or, you know.
So I listen to the trades. I'm listening to manufacturing. We've got some great partnerships we're building with manufacturing. And I'm not waiting for the new school, and I'm not waiting for Centennial to get renovated. These are things that are ongoing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They will be enhanced if we have these new facilities. But if we don't, there's still going to be programs that I'm going to push and have in our schools.
So a lot of the discussion about the new Central High School is the location.
Yes.
Out there.
Yes.
And, you know, we had a brief discussion about that earlier. That,
right.
That seems to be the trend nationwide. Anytime you drive to a new community, Bloomington.
Right.
Bloomington Northern, other communities, Belleville,
yes.
Illinois. You notice that the high schools are not really in the center of the town too much anymore. They're
right.
Building them out near thoroughfares and
yes.
and things like that. So that's one of the criticisms here is, you know, Central is going to get moved out of the city.
Right. And it's so ironic to me that they want to put Champaign Central High School up on the north side of town. They went through a process of looking at 17 different locations. They had a rubric of 50 different things they were looking at, and this location ended up being the best of the 17 available. What's going to happen to the old Champaign Central, Mark, is what I get asked. If we move the school, what are you going to do with it? We're going to repurpose that school. We're not getting rid of it. That's going to be a viable piece of the Champaign Unit 4, and it's going to be whether we house our administration building there, whether we bring our Family Information Center over to that building, whether we bring our alternative education program to that building. There's going to be some great things we can do with that building, but it's going to become a community-used building in mm-hmm. the central part of our city.
Sure.
We've got a gym in that building.
Yeah.
Let's use it with the community. We've got a theater in that building. Let's
yeah.
use it with the community. Let's make Champaign Central High School on University Avenue a community Unit 4 building that we can all use and all be proud of. And at the same time, build a brand new facility on the north side of town, which is right next to a subdivision that's already there. mm-hmm. and close to a number of multifamily apartment buildings. So, you know, I know people are struggling with this, but when I had a gentleman tell me, well, you're building a high school out by Thomasboro, I said, sir, you're exaggerating just a little bit.
Right.
It is up north, but it's not by Thomasboro.
We were talking, too, before the show about the percentage of kids that actually these days walk or ride their bike or something to
exactly.
Central High School. And you were saying that number was less than 10%?
Yes. Many people have said, well, you know, our kids won't be able to walk to school anymore. Well, I don't know how many folks in this town have been to an elementary school, to a middle school, or to a high school when school is starting up and or letting out. But there's a tremendous amount of folks picking up their kids with cars. There are buses, MTD and yellow buses, all over the place. And so we thought, well, let's just find out from our present Champaign Central students, hey, guys, how do you get to school in the morning? How do you go home at night? And of that 1,190 kids who wrote out and said, boom, 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 we offered them, do you walk? Do you ride a bike? Do you drive your own car? Do you get a ride? Do you MTD, yellow bus? 9.8% of those kids said, I walked to school. Out of a 1,190 kids, 9.8 said they walk. Okay, when I think about where our new Central High School is going to be, it's right next to Ashland Park subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be people walking from there. It's next to a large amount of multifamily apartment buildings on the north side of town, which are more than you can shake a stick at. You're also very close to Wilbur Heights, and you're also real close to Dobbins Downs.
Mm-hmm.
So the Dobbins Downs subdivision, for the first time ever, is going to be close, without having to go across an interstate, to a school.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of folks that are going to be able to transfer to Central, and I just, that argument, I have a hard time with it. So
I know a lot of parents drop their kids off at school these days.
Yes.
I drive past a grade school over there on Kirby Avenue near Mattis. And, boy, you want to avoid that area when school's letting out, because they block off a whole lane of traffic there for 15, 20 minutes, half an hour.
Exactly.
And they let cars sit out there. And it's obnoxious to try and drive through that traffic.
You think that it doesn't happen at Champaign Central or Champaign Centennial, it does. Look at Crescent. Look at University Avenue. At that time of day, it's very, very congested.
Yeah.
So I'm a big believer in saying, if we can get our facility for Champaign Central in one place and allow our kids to go to school there and then participate in band, participate in after-school activities, participate in athletics after school on that location where they don't have to drive, I think the safety feature is actually enhanced by having everything in one place instead of having our kids have to drive or walk to a football field, drive or walk to a softball field, drive or walk to a soccer field. None of these things are on our campus area.
I know. I used to go to the YMCA when it was over there on Church Street, and we shared that with the Central Wrestling team.
Yep.
And various other things, and that was a little bit obnoxious, too.
Exactly.
You know, you go to swimming or something like that, you get out of the Y, and you had to share it with about 30 young kids that were fairly well behaved, but you know, it's a young kid's locker room at that point in time, you know?
And I know our community, we believe in education, because you have a world-class University of Illinois right here, rated I think number 8 in the country, and they just finished building, which is ironic to me, they finished building a new electrical and computer engineering building on just south of Beckman, and that building was 230,000 square feet. And it cost $95 million to build it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at building a 300,000-plus square foot new high school for $97 million, and that includes all the fields, all the parking, all the things that we have to have. And I find it, you know, where the kids at U of I said, this is the most beautiful building I've ever been in. I'm proud to be here. It has the labs I've needed. It helps me compete with the other people around the country. Why would I leave here to go to MIT when now I've got this building? But yet, we in Champaign, are we going to allow our kids to have that kind of a quality facility for them to go to, or do we want to keep them where they are?
Mm-hmm. You mentioned after-school programs. There's provisions for transportation for after-school programs.
Like if I'm on the softball team, I've got to find my way out to the softball field behind Kerry Busey on Kirby Avenue. That's where Central softball field is. If I want to play soccer, I've got to go behind Franklin Middle School. Between Franklin and Judah, that's where the Central soccer field is. If I want to play football, I've got to go down to McKinley Field, mm-hmm. and that's the baseball field or the football field. If I'm going to go in band, I'm in a band class, and I'm in a room that holds about 60, maybe, and now we've got a band that's got 110 people in it. Okay, we can't practice inside, so we're going to practice. Well, we don't have any place to practice near a school, so we have to get on buses and bus out to Centennial to practice there, our band, and then bus back.
Really? That's how that works?
That's how that works.
Interesting. I always thought that was the Centennial band playing out
no,
there.
No, it's Centennial at this time during class. They walk out during class, and they practice during their class period. But John Curry, who's the band director at Central, his class period, he's got to get on a bus, take his kids to the field to practice at the end of the day, or they can't. They wouldn't have a place to practice.
So you say the new high school, Central, is about $97 million?
Yes, sir.
And the referendum is asking for about $149 million?
Right. So the other part of that would go to Centennial. So the $97 million would go to the new Central, and the other $51 million would go to building the additions onto Centennial, which is going to be all new science and computer classrooms, enhancing their entryway there that should have been done years ago, building a new industrial technology center at Centennial. Those are all going to be additions that Centennial will have.
Yeah. You got a nice little flyer out there with the facts about it.
Yep.
It's got a map, and it shows you're going to expand the square footage out there at Centennial, maybe by almost a third again?
Yes. So both high schools, as far as square footage, will both be around 300,000 square feet each when we get done. That will hold up to 1,700 students in each school. So we have room for growth, and we also have room for all the kids we have today.
You mentioned you're at about 103% right
now. About 103 to 104% capacity right now, and that's not going down. And so if people say, well, why should I vote for this? Well, if you want to have kids in portables, we already had to put one portable up at Centennial. But if this doesn't pass over time, we're going to put more portables up at both schools. And also, Bob, as you know, when you want to add on to your home or you want to do an addition on your home, well, honey, let's not do it now. Let's wait till next year. Well, next year it's going to cost more money.
Right.
So if we can get this done now, we can get these things lined up with the dollars today instead of the dollars tomorrow.
Wonderful. And the election is Tuesday.
The election's Tuesday. And so we're going to find out just what this community thinks about education for our kids.
Education is very important for everybody, our kids.
Well, in my opinion, the greatest resource this country has is our youth.
Right.
And if we don't take care of our youth and educate them, we're all in trouble.
Any closing words there, Mark? We really appreciate you coming to the World Labor Hour here at WEFT.
Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate working with the local unions, the trade unions, the manufacturing, the agriculture. They all have been wonderful, and we just look forward to continuing our partnership and making it even better.
Wonderful. I mean, everybody would advocate that people get out and vote on Tuesday.
You betcha.
It's an important thing to do. And we're going to leave you with another track from Ann Feeney's CD here. This is After School. And once again, mention that Ann Feeney should be a guest here next week on the Labor Hour. She's going to be in town for the Champaign-Urbana Folk and Roots Festival. That's going to be happening all throughout downtown Urbana next weekend, Friday and Saturday, November 7th and 8th. And we really thank Mark for coming on the program today. And
thanks, Bob.
Invite you back anytime in the future.
Okay.
Jennifer Martin had a very bad day. She was teased by Amanda when she wanted to play.